What's up, everybody? This is Andrew Schultz. I'm here with Akash and Kaz, and welcome to the second episode of the Flagrant 2 podcast, analysis by assholes. Quite a week. Yeah. I think we should get right into it, man. We'll do some...
No shortage of topics.
I know we should get right into it.
I'm just saying, you know, usually you promo stuff off the jump. Or
nah, y'all too devastated.
Fuck yeah, I do want to say thank you so much to everybody who watched the first episode. I was blown away, man, or listened to the first episode, man, because we did it last week. I mean, we got over like 100,000 listens.
That's dope. That's
even amazing. Before that, it's not even, you know, now it's over that, but we're already at 100K, I think, you know, midway through the week. So thank you guys so much. To everybody who's listening to this right now, make sure you go subscribe to the Apple Podcast, iTunes, whatever it is. It's up right there. It's Flagrant 2. There's a few Flagrant 2s, okay? About to be one.
One thing we had to worry about.
Man, we thought that name was so hot, so original.
We didn't think about it at all. So anyway, look, ours is Flagrant 2, No Easy Buckets. Okay, that's the one. You could see the, you know, obviously the episode art and all these things. We posted our own on social medias. But make sure you subscribe, tap into it, get involved. Let's do it. Let's just start talking about it right now. My New York Knicks.
Y'all's New York Knicks.
Oh, our New York Knicks. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Man, even like when you kind of like mentally prepare yourself for this day for so long.
Yeah.
It still sucks when it finally happens.
Yeah, it's a breakup. It's like you don't want to be with that person at all. And then you see her with a dude and you're like, the fuck you doing? Moving on.
Nah, y'all didn't just break up. Y'all broke up and then started dating the ugliest people imaginable.
Oh, yeah.
You started dating Enes Kanter.
Yeah. It was...
You know, And here's one thing. I'll get into like the emotional part of the Melo leaving.
Yeah, let it out, man.
First, but I mean later. But I mean, like, I'm not totally upset at Enes Kanter. I think he's a solid player. He can do a lot worse than him.
First of all, the Turkish government is gonna kill this guy. the first 2 months of the year, he's just moving closer to Turkey. There are gonna be Turkish people in New York that could take him out. There's no Turkish people in Oklahoma. He was safe in OKC, but now he can't even go to 34th Street and 6th Avenue.
He's been here a lot. I appreciate him because, like, I think I saw him on Desus and Merrill one time.
Right.
I was like, oh, all right. Like, he fits right in. Like, once he got traded to New York, I'm like, you know, it's weird on the surface, but I'm like, yo.
He'll be fine.
Him in New York will be just fine.
He'll be fine. He can't play any D, but he's a very skilled offensive player.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And it actually gives us a little bit of a post. It gives us some post game that Porzingis really just doesn't have just
yet. Yeah. And even for you know, for a little while, like, Willie Hernan Gomez, like, the Knicks got, like, on the basketball sense, even though, like, if this was, like, the 90s, yeah, I'd be really happy with this trade. Because the Knicks got really big, really girthy. Lots of big seven-footers with skills and all that type of stuff.
Shout out to the porn references already.
right back in the Bang Bros territory. But, no, I mean, like, I liked it. I think the Knicks could have done a lot worse, especially given that Melo was mentally tapped out from being in the city already.
Yeah.
But it still sucks. Like, it's...
I mean, this is typical New York Knicks fan shit.
I was just about to say.
This is what we always do. No matter what the situation is, we make the best out of it. Like, we are Mr. Positivity. Like,
you are abused spouses.
Hell yeah, we are abused spouses.
No. It's not that bad. They're going to change.
He hits me because he wants me to be better. You know what I mean? That's what Dolan is testing. God doesn't give you anything you can't handle.
That's what it feels
like. Now, here, take this second round draft pick.
I like it.
Bro, okay. Here's the thing. I think just to get into what's really happening here, I think the Knicks organization realized that they had to cut off the leg to save the body, you know? Yeah. And I think Melo was a cancer, and I think and I'll get into what I mean by that. But Melo's a cancer, and in order to save the body, which is the Knicks franchise, which is Porzingis, they had to get Melo the fuck out of there. Mm-hmm. And I think what showed me that is essentially Zingis missing the exit meeting at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a 21-year-old kid. This is not a 15-year-old fucking veteran, all right? I mean, if Rasheed Wallace wants to go, yo, I'm not going to an exit meeting. All right, Rasheed, you don't go to an exit meeting. This guy goes, I'm not going to an exit meeting. I needed to, what is it? What was he saying? He goes, I need to take off some steam.
Yeah. But apparently he left because Jeff Hornacek told him to stop playing like a pussy. And
he got real salty about that.
Bro, well, he didn't even tell Porzingis.
Stop playing like a pussy.
He told Willie Hernan Gomez to tell Kristaps Porzingis to stop playing like a pussy, which to me seems like amazing coaching. Like, anybody,
bro,
anybody who has played basketball, it's like, yo, you have your certain levels of coaches. You got your coaches that coddle, you got your tough love coaches, yeah, and you just got like your real smart X's and O's guys.
Yeah.
And I think Porzingis has had a little bit of everybody in his short career.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you had Phil Jackson, who was like the big philosophy guy.
Right.
You had, who was the coach last year? Derek Fisher, big X's and O's guy, I knew, whatever.
Right.
Everybody who's ever been around Jeff
Hornacek. He was definitely an X's guy.
Hey! That's great. Oh, I'm so mad I didn't think of that. Fuck, that was good. Fuck.
And anybody who has played for Hornacek or who has played against him as a player,
yeah,
I'd say he's a very hard-nosed, no bullshit type of dude.
I like it.
And to have a career and be that white.
Yeah.
Like, he was, you know what I mean? Like, he's the whitest, scratching his face to say hi to his wife and kids. This is the whitest man in America.
Yeah.
Played in the NBA in the 90s.
Yes, the rough and tumble
and
90s.
Was good.
In Utah.
And
in,
yeah,
Utah.
And was like, good.
Yeah, he really good.
And Jerry Sloan coached him, so he's going to be a hard ass.
Exactly. And him telling Kristaps Porzingis to stop playing like a pussy was probably some of the best advice he can get at the time.
Yeah, like, honestly. I just think it's weird that a player at 21 thinks it's okay for him to say, hey, I need to go clear my mind.
Millennials.
Mm. This motherfucker is supposed to be growing up in Latvia. You know,
yeah,
what I mean? Like, you're supposed to have it hard.
Latvia, yeah.
Exactly.
So you
got bullet holes in your national monuments and shit. You're not supposed to need to clear your mind. Jerk off. You're 21 years old. When you're 20, listen, I haven't
get
had to
get drunk.
I'm 33. I got to clear my mind now.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Clear mind is a 30-year-old shit.
Yeah.
At 21, when did you ever go, you know what, I need some time to myself so I can think about things, so I could decompress? The fuck is wrong with you? Play basketball for a living. Shoot some free throws.
Oh,
there you
God.
Go. Your mind is clear.
Yeah.
You whack off and shoot 100 free throws, yeah, you could do anything you want at 21.
No, I mean, you know what, I get it, because, like, you know, in most cases, he's probably looking at all these other young stars that he came into the league with, right? Probably looking at Karl Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell and, like, all these guys who've kind of had their trials and tribulations. And no matter, say what you want about either organization they came from, they've gave them every opportunity to succeed.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like,
yep, yep.
Karl Anthony Towns, as great as he is, he's never had to have to deal with another alpha on his team and have to make it work directly coming to the league. D'Angelo Russell, as soon as he came to the league,
yours, Poppy.
Lakers gave him the keys, like, dude, sink or swim. Here you go. You know what I mean? And Porzingis hasn't really had that yet. So it's kind of like he's, and on top of that, you know, this past season when you had Phil Jackson doing all the wild shit, and the melodrama, and the Derrick Rose missing games, like, the Knicks were a dumpster fire last year as an organization. So it's like, yeah, I get it. If you're 21 years old and you're looking at all these guys rising and you know, being like MVP candidates, and like you got Giannis Antetokounmpo, who's like taking these leaps and all this stuff, and you're supposed to be a better quote unquote prospect than these guys. I get it. I see why you would need to take some time off.
Can I say one thing?
Stop enabling this shit, Kes.
Yeah, no, I want to say
Stop
one thing that's,
right,
I want to say one thing to Knicks fans and all fans of the NBA, really. I was so tired of seeing Phil get dragged, and Phil doesn't know what he's doing, and Phil has lost it. The Knicks are terrible. They're always going to be terribly run. And the reason Kristaps walked into a shitty situation is because they signed Melo to a huge contract and built a terrible team around him, and then traded mad first round picks to try to build a second round playoff
team. Not wrong.
Not wrong at all.
Here's the thing. Where is Kristaps picking up this stuff?
And to be honest, from
my understanding, the people I've spoken to, it's not Kristaps as much as it is his posse.
Yeah,
and I use the word posse specifically.
Yes, I was about to
say. Because this dude got a posse, too. He got a posse of hooligans and thugs. Okay?
Latvian posse?
Say what? He got the Latvian posse.
A lot of it is his brothers, too.
So he has these two, I think it's two brothers that are around him. And what
Martins
they're doing,
and some other guy,
whatever, some shit with hella J's and I's in it. So they're around him, and they're basically telling him exactly what he can get away with. Now, where do they learn this? They learn this from Melo. Melo don't practice. Melo complains about shots. Melo's bitching constantly about the team and the direction of the team, and Melo sure as fuck ain't going to no exit meeting if you don't want to. Mm-hmm. So you got these brothers that are surrounding him, and they are cancerous. All of a sudden, the gangrene is starting to seep into Porzingis, and the organization goes, look, is it the best thing for our team to let Melo play next year, opt out, and get out of here?
No.
Is that the best thing? I actually think, financially speaking, it would be best, right? Because they could save about $28 million the following year, then have no other contracts on the books.
Yeah. They would. Financially speaking.
They save about 20. It would be $28 million on the final year. He would opt out. He'll go play with Bron or whoever he goes to play with.
And you got to rebuild and be shitty.
Okay, so you have one more shitty year, right? But you can't risk the gangrene seeping into Porzingis. So you get rid of Melo and you test the trade market. And in one of the most sad things in recent NBA history, the trade market for Carmelo Anthony, whether you like it or not, is soft. We can talk about how great his skill set is.
Is it really, though?
It's soft. Dylan but it's not that soft.
And a fucking totem
it's soft,
pole.
But think it's about not it, that though. Soft.
It's not that soft. Because think about it. Look, who did DeMarcus Cousins get traded for? Buddy Hield and a steak sandwich. Like, who did Paul George get traded for? Victor Oladipo, some Sabonis kid, and another pick? It's like... These
and the Knicks didn't even get steak sandwiches. They got fries and ketchup and a fucking cup of water, not even a bottle. You got a cup of ice.
I just think
that's an interesting thing about DeMarcus. Yeah. But we also know the reason why DeMarcus was traded in that position,
absolutely.
Right? Because he's
a head case.
He's a head case. Yeah, yeah. He's a cancer. He could potentially ruin a team, right?
Absolutely.
Paul is interesting. I think the Paul trade has way more to do with the fact that Paul's been almost blatantly open about where he's going this year.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
But as far as DeMarcus goes, you know, it was your personality that's killing you. And I think what happened with Melo as well is that it's his personality that put him into the situation.
For sure.
I think it speaks more to the fact that in the NBA, and I might be going out on a limb here, I think the mega trade is dead. Like, okay. I think the big blockbuster trade, like, when you think about it, the Kyrie and Isaiah trade is kind of a blockbuster trade only because of the teams involved and their rivalries and all that
right.
type of stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, superstars don't get traded for superstars like that anymore.
Yep.
There's always a winner and there's always a loser.
Yep.
There's never been, you know, if you have a superstar on your team,
yeah.
you have to realize that now in 2017, you're taking a risk by putting this guy on your team that you're never going to get equal value back.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to go and get somebody. You're not going to get another Carmelo in the trade market.
15 years ago, Chris Webber could find out he got traded on SportsCenter.
Yeah.
Now, Chris Webber is just straight up like, I'm not going to resign in a year in Sacramento. I'm not going to do that. If I'm in Sacramento, I want out.
It's like, bring me these trade options and I'll decide. Which way I want to go,
right?
And it's like you can't pull that off anymore. Like it has to be a winner and a loser in a trade, and they're just gonna either get assets for you,
right.
Get picks for you, or get some money off the books.
But
is
Cleveland not a better trade if Cleveland's willing to give up Love, which I think they would have been.
So there was a guy I spoke to. I have to keep off record, but he hit me up before the day before the trade was announced, and he goes, hey man, I can't say anything, but I'd just like to tell you that Cleveland's probably not done tampering with their roster, not tampering, but like tweaking their roster.
Yeah.
I go, really? Okay. And he hits me up the next day, and he's just like, hey man, I guess they couldn't find a third team for Love. So they weren't, they wanted more. They were like, I'm not just going to give up Love for Melo. Mm. I need more than that. And that says a lot about Bron, because Bron is basically saying, yo, Melo's not as good as Love.
Yeah.
With what he's building on the team. And I think OKC has some serious challenges.
But here's to that real quick. I'm sorry. OKC, we'll get to later. But to that, LeBron really don't want to play with Melo, because he has, potentially, he could have had Melo, Dwayne Wade, and whoever else on the team. Like that banana boat team they've always talked about. He'd have had 3/4 of it or whatever. He's a Chris Paul away from everything he dreamed of his whole life.
Sure.
All that tells me is that LeBron is a better friend than me. Because he was like, you know what? I love Melo so much.
To Kevin Love or?
To Melo.
Okay.
To Melo, where he's like, dude, like, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. Because it's like, yo, think about it. Like, all the people you play with besides, like, Dwayne Wade, like, that's, like, really his only, brother that he played with. Like, it's cool, but you don't see him kicking with Chris Bosh like that.
Yeah.
Even when Kyrie was there, like, even today when they were doing, like, the exit interviews and all that, I mean, not the exit interviews, the media day interviews and all that type of stuff, they made it perfectly clear, like, yo, like, him and Bron, it's not that they hated each other. They just weren't boys like that.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying?
He sunned them up in that interview.
Yeah. I think the whole banana boat thing in theory just looked good on paper.
Who else you gonna chill with?
Yeah.
You want to chill with all your friends are 5'7"? Like, at a certain point in time, you want to have conversation with people at eye level.
So that's what I was about to ask. Is that banana boat thing overblown? And people are just, we all read into it all the time.
Well, there's 10 people they can relate to in the world.
But he did say, I want to play with these guys.
Yeah, okay, of course. Who doesn't? I mean, when playing the Olympics, it worked out. But at the same point in time, he doesn't want to have to yell at Melo all fucking year.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to have to do it. Listen, here's the reality of the matter. Melo is going to OKC. We have good and bad situation. The good, you might get Olympic Melo.
Yeah.
Right? What is Olympic Melo?
Which I think you would get on Cleveland.
Olympic Melo is catch and shoot. That's all you got to do. You are third. You are going to play the third option, right? Russ is going to drive and create. Second option to drive and create is going to be Paul George. And you just spot the fuck up and shoot. Not to mention, Adams and Paul George are going to defend anybody of measure on the other team. You could be the Melo you've always wanted to be, which is not play dick for defense and just shoot shots, right? That's the possibility. That is a good possibility. Now, what is the bad? Russ is the alpha dog on the team. Is Melo going to be okay with Russ saying get the fuck back on D?
I think he is.
Fuck out of here.
He better, dude. That's the
right. I don't know if he's going to be okay with get the fuck back on D. I think he's going to be okay with Russ being the alpha and carrying the burden. That's what I thought.
Carry the burden. But is he going to be okay getting yelled at to run back? Is he going to be okay getting screamed at that he's not playing enough defense, he's not playing help?
I honestly don't think so. I think the pressure isn't even on Melo. I think more of the pressure is on Westbrook than it is on anybody. It's like, okay, you just came out this historic season. Mm-hmm. You average a triple-double. You average like 11 assists a game with Victor Oladipo and Steven Adams as your two best options, right? Now you have two bona fide stars.
Yep.
Whatever you think about Melo or Paul George, like these guys are star players, and they could lead a team. Well, they've led teams in the past by themselves.
Yeah.
Now you have to improve on this season and show that you can take these guys who are older than you, have been in the league longer than you, and let them and you know, just captain that ship.
But he's done it.
And a playoff exit and an early playoff exit isn't enough.
He did it with Harden and KD.
Young Harden and KD.
Sure, but he did it. He's done it with talent. It's not like he hasn't found a way to be effective and also make other guys effective with talent.
And I think to that point, I agree only because these two guys are very different than Harden and KD. Like Harden never started. At that time. Like, he always came off the bench when he
You're dealing with more ego now. He dealt with less ego before.
Absolutely.
But, I think there's something there. I mean, I think the other question that we're going to find out is Billy Donovan, in order to maintain Russ's loyalty, has to draw up every single last second shot for Russ. You to keep his loyalty, right? That's my man who you have a 5-year contract with. If you want to keep your contract as a coach, you got to take care of him. Melo's on the books for 1 year.
Yeah.
So you gotta write every single
Russ
play up
this
for
year,
Russ.
Potentially, right?
He re-signed.
Russ could opt out. He could opt out next year.
He could.
Yeah, he has a player option.
He has an October 16th deadline to pick up like a 5-year, $207 million.
My understanding was that the implication was he was going to stay.
Oh, yeah. The extension's on the table.
Right, right.
But he could opt out next summer. And
fair enough. That being said, you want to have, if you don't want to lose him, if you don't want to lose his loyalty, you got to write up the play for him, right?
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, that's essentially with any team, right? Like Larry Bird's going to get the last second shot on his tape, whatever. Your main guy's going to get it. Melo is arguably the best finisher, best clutch shot maker of his generation.
Yeah.
I mean, statistically, I think
statistically,
that's important.
He's up there, and Paul George is one of the worst clutch shots.
So get Paul out of there. How long is Melo going to put up with it? That's my question. How long until Melo goes, yo, just give me the ball on the fucking block and let me take care of this business?
People ask the same question about the Celtics when they had Allen, Paul Pierce, and Garnett. Garnett was the Paul George. He was really like, I mean, look, I usually take this, but I don't really make it, so y'all just go ahead and do that. But Allen and Pierce never really had that problem.
Right.
You find a way. I think it could work, man. I really do.
I think it could work, too. I think it could work. I honestly think Paul George is going to be the most expensive 3-and-D player in NBA history. I legitimately think Melo's going to be the second option there. I think he's a better offensive player than Paul George. I think Paul George is probably a more complete player.
Will Paul George lock up like he does?
Yeah.
If he's not getting 16 shots a game.
I think he's going to lock up more because he doesn't have to take on that offensive responsibility anymore.
Oh, so you don't think he wants to shoot?
I think he wants to win, dude.
Yeah, I think he just wants to do what gets it. Because he never struck me as a ball hog. I never heard that rap. I never heard bad teammate. And if you are the star and still play great D, that says something about you and your nature. Because there's a lot of stars. Melo's one. They're a star of the team. They don't really play D like that. I don't really want to mark up the other team's best.
Let me tell you something. If you're not pass me the ball and I'm not getting up shots, I ain't locking down on D. I'm going to keep it very funky with you. That's the reality of the matter. And, you know, he's got his own sneaker and he's not going to put up shots.
That's true.
How many people with their own...
three signature shoes on the team, dude.
It's crazy, right? It's like, but how many people with their own sneaker are fine taking 8 shots a game? I mean, Klay Thompson has his own sneaker, but it's from China. It don't count. It's not like you have a Nike.
Obvious or Arios, whatever the fuck them shit.
Come on. Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's not like a casino.
They're terrible. They're awful. They're awful looking shoes.
So it's just a rough situation. I think we're going to find out. I'll be honest with you. I think the remedy for that situation is Wade. If you can get Wade to go to OKC, which I don't think he'll go.
I heard he's interested, though.
But I think he'll go Miami or Cleveland. But if you can get Wade to go to OKC, you'll have somebody that Melo must respect. Mm-hmm. Melo don't have to respect these young guns, mm-hmm. right? You don't have to respect Paul.
He's not just a young gun. He's the reigning MVP.
Son,
this is his team. This is
Melo said Melo, a big Melo, reason Melo, he wanted to come here is Russell Westbrook.
Melo is in there knowing, and if he doesn't know, Billy Donovan's going to let him know, like, listen, this is Russell's fucking team.
And I'm going to be honest.
Will he? He better?
I think you soured on Melo.
I mean, I'm with you. I just think that, I don't know. I just feel like Melo's a tough one,
I think,
man.
You
like,
soured on him too much. When the Knicks traded for him, I was telling you, I was like, nah, bro, he's not that guy.
Yeah.
And then you were like, nah, obviously, New York Knicks fan, real gung-ho. Yeah. And now I think you soured too far on him.
Yeah.
Melo also does want to win.
No, he doesn't.
I do think he wants to win.
I don't think Melo cares about winning.
Why do we talk about Olympic Melo?
We're scorned Knicks fans. You have to understand.
Yeah, but why is there an Olympic Melo?
I just don't think he values it at all. I think not only do I think he doesn't value it, I think he's going to be miserable in OKC. Like, Russ is a loner, right? All Russ does is hang out with his family. He got like one friend, and they just chill.
Russ faithful,
he right? He's
that's
faithful.
How much of a loner Russ is. Exactly. He's faithful NBA athlete.
He raps on Snapchat. That's how you know he's not fucking no hoes.
Yeah.
Hey, baby, hold this phone so I can rap to some people, right? I'm gonna practice dance moves. And then you got Paul George, who's a country dude. He likes fishing and shit. He'll be fine in Oklahoma. It's not a big deal. Where are the Puerto Ricans? Melo's not even gonna be able to exist. How's Melo gonna be able to exist in OKC?
He did 7 years in Denver.
Say what?
True.
He did 7 years in Denver.
They got some tall Mexicans in fucking Colorado that could suffice for Melo.
You don't think they got Mexicans in Oklahoma City?
No.
Understand how borders work.
Where's Oklahoma?
It's not that far from Texas, where there's a lot of Mexicans.
This is true.
Well, what they need to do is Melo needs to put out bulletin right now, all these hurricane relief victims. What they need to do, hey,
come
Puerto
stay
Rico,
in my house.
We got electricity in OKC. If y'all want some electricity, come to Melo's house. Melo needs to buy out a Motel 6 or some shit, just move into some families, for real. Just play Gasolina Despacito nonstop until you got another
You're
thousand.
Wildly racist, by the way. That's what you guys
bro,
know.
Bro, I don't it's care, bro. Racist. I know what Melo needs.
Yes, but still, understand, on a basketball front, I do believe this is the most talent Melo's ever been around.
Okay.
Same with Paul George.
Yeah.
And to an extent, same with Westbrook.
This is the first time Melo's been with a star in his prime.
Yeah.
He got AI past his prime. Chauncey Billups past his prime.
He's got two stars in their prime.
He got two stars in their prime.
And it's the first time he's going to a team where he knows, well, he better know, that he's not the man there. He's not the franchise player.
If he knows that, this is an amazing situation.
Mm-hmm.
If Melo is obedient, this is an amazing situation. And he accepts his role, amazing for him. I don't think he's capable of that.
I think he's been through so much here in New York that I don't even think he wants the burden of being the man anymore.
Yeah, I can agree with that too.
I don't even think he wants.
Look how much you hate him.
It's not that I hate him.
That's not. I'm just saying, like, he's getting that from all angles.
I don't hate him as a person.
And Kaz is the one person I know who defends Melo.
Yes,
everybody loves Melo all of a sudden.
No, I'm telling you, I don't love him. I just think
even in Denver, I'm never.
I think Melo, in a lot of ways, is kind of. I kind of agree with Andrew in a lot of ways. He didn't really care about. I don't know how much he really cares about winning in his DNA, but I think he's so sick of losing and not playing with people he likes. And playing the shitty system and a shitty organization. Sam Presti is a fucking magician.
Yeah,
yeah.
If I'm Dan Gilbert, I have him shot tomorrow. I almost had Paul George. I could have had Melo. You fucked me twice.
And now I'm about to get Dwayne Wade.
If he gets Dwayne Wade and I'm Dan Gilbert, that's it.
Do you think Wade is gone?
I assume he goes to Cleveland. But OKC is a good look too. I would assume Cleveland, but I don't know. OKC is a good look.
I don't think there's a lot of minutes for Wade in Cleveland. I think there's a lot of minutes for Wade in OKC. I think he goes to Cleveland. He's playing with he's sharing time with Jarrett Smith, Iman Shumpert, what's his face? Derrick Rose when Isaiah Thomas gets healthy. Like, he'll be off the ball a lot. And then Wade? It's like, that's a lot. That's a lot to go around. That two guard spot is wide open in OKC. It's like, who, Andre Roberson?
Yeah,
I'm starting over him.
They could really use They could. Well, I would like him coming off the bench regardless.
I think Roberson Wade is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's very. They could really use him over there. It'd be lovely. He would definitely get more minutes. But that being said, I mean, Cleveland would be so deep.
So deep.
Cleveland would be way better off. Cleveland won the offseason if Wade goes.
I believe so.
And how is Bron not on the line? How is he not calling? They've been hanging out all summer, going to Fashion Week events and shit.
I don't know which movie I'm referencing right now, but it's almost like with two of your best friends are like, you got Melo probably trying to like make those calls to Wade. You got Bron making those calls.
But if you're a basketball player and you're making a basketball decision, you're going to go play with Melo or Wade or LeBron?
I want to go play with Westbrook.
Oh, that's a good
I want to play with Russell Westbrook, dog. Like, if I'm a basketball player, there's like three, not even a basketball player, as a basketball fan, there's three people on the planet Earth right now, to me, that are worth the price of admission every single time I walk in there. It's LeBron James, it's Kevin Durant, it's Russell Westbrook. Every single time I'm watching this dude, he's a force of nature. Yeah. And it's like he takes the pressure off of everybody, for good or bad.
Yeah.
He shoots himself into a lot of bad situations, but like he calmed that down a little bit last year, but he really didn't have a whole lot of help, and he still won like 50-something games and went to the playoffs, first round, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, at this point in my career, I don't know how many years LeBron got left in them. I don't know if LeBron's staying next year.
Hey, I mean, Dwayne Wade, you need one.
All of them might leave. Let's keep it real. All of them might leave. Okay, here's an interesting situation. Let's say Wade does go to OKC. OKC wins the championship. Does Kevin Durant jump off the Golden Gate Bridge? Does he become the most famous suicide victim of the Golden Gate Bridge?
I'm rooting for OKC so hard.
Oh, how could you not be? Think about it. How could you not? Oh, what sweet redemption.
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
I love you. I always bring pro wrestling into this.
Go.
But there is nothing, like, this is such a perfectly scripted redemption story for Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
He was the maligned, bad shot taken point guard, couldn't lead a team, couldn't do this.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant, for better or for, you know, if he said it or didn't say, he indirectly said, I can't win with a guard like you. I can win with a guard like Stephen Curry. So I'm going to go win with him, right? He leaves. Russell Westbrook has the historically great NBA season. Yeah. He sticks it out in the small little, you know, Chesapeake Arena, wherever that he fucking plays, the cow tipping in Oklahoma and all that type of shit. And not only that, he sticks it out. He gets two All-Stars. He gets a team that is arguably better, if they make it work, better than his best team in Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
And they have the firepower to go man for man with Golden State right now. Like,
ooh.
Firepower wise, like, they have a puncher's chance. That's what
I wanted to
ask,
but I was afraid to because I was afraid it was going to get shot down immediately.
Dude, they have a puncher's chance against those guys. If they make it work, like, just as far as just talent wise.
And matchup wise, a little bit. Like, nobody can shut down Durant, but a good defender for Durant is Paul George.
Paul George could take him. I think Paul George could take him. I think it's a push. He gets a slight edge.
Oh, Paul George would be a great person to guard Durant.
Yeah, that's
if
what
I had
I'm
to
saying.
Choose somebody in the league, the length alone.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Right? Durant, again, offensively, is a force, to use your word. But Paul George is a great option to defend him. Andre Roberson.
Roberson locks up Clay.
Roberson locks up Clay. Russell Westbrook, I think, in that playoff matchup, seven-game series, I think he'd eat Curry's lunch.
If Stephen Curry,
off of sheer force of will.
Stephen Curry doesn't have the safety net of Draymond and Clay to take the heat off of Russell because they have to worry about Melo and Paul George.
That's right.
I don't know, dude.
And like, Adams,
OKC makes that work.
Let Adams guard Draymond. Draymond's trash on offense.
Draymond is not trash on offense. He's not trash.
He got one move. He got one dainty ass floater looking 3-pointer from the top of the key, and that's it. The dude shoots like he's trying to guide it in. He shoots like a witch. He just holds his hand out there with all of his fingers like there's some sort of electricity. Said, no, I don't care. It goes in. It goes. It's fine. But I'm sick and tired of how overrated Draymond. Amazing defender, yes. He's an excellent passer for his size. He's an excellent passer. Is he the greatest passer ever? Absolutely not. He's an excellent passer for his size and his lack of a dribbling ability. Mm. That's what he's a good passer for. But there are other 6'9s in the league that are incredible passers.
But you gotta understand, those 6'9 guys that are in the league, they aren't the third or fourth option on their team. He's by far the best third or fourth option.
So here's a question.
Everywhere.
What team is he not a third or fourth option on? I don't think there's a almost, team in the league that he's a third, that he's not a third or fourth option on.
He's not a third or fourth option. He's a fourth option.
He's a fourth option. He's
okay.
Some nights he's a third option.
I cannot imagine him being an option over Clay, Katie, or Steph ever.
He's a fourth option. He's a fourth option. But the most he would be on any other team in the league is a third. He has no offensive ability. It's just dribble straight. If there's a layup, take it. If not, pass the fucking ball away.
Yeah. Well, all right. I put like this. You put Draymond or OKC or Cleveland. Where does Draymond land as far as like the hierarchy of like
of scoring
of anything?
Fourth option
of like
fourth
of like,
on OKC,
fifth on Cleveland.
He's fifth on Cleveland,
of course. I think you're gonna let him launch before anybody else.
I think he's fourth on Cleveland.
He's ahead of JR.
He gets the ball more than JR.
He might get the ball. He gonna pass it to JR so JR can shoot. Yeah, but if you shoot instead of JR,
it's either fourth or fifth.
I mean an option as in like you get the ball in your hands to make something happen, not just a scoring option. Like
this is what he makes happen.
He can
passes the ball to someone who can make something happen. That's your job. Don't when I see him dribbling the ball, I've never seen him do a crossover. You hope that a pump fake is gonna work, and you take one dribble, lay it up.
Well, you gotta understand, a lot of people that are guarding him are big guys. Well, all he needs to do is pretty much outspeed these dudes.
Sure, but Adams, he's not going to make that happen with.
I don't know.
Adams is going to have him on Smash, but he could also have Adams on Smash.
I don't know, man. I think it's a really underrated Draymond Green. Like I've seen
I just
Draymond,
don't know where
I've seen
scoring.
Draymond physically dominate Kristaps Porzingis. This motherfucker is 7'3". And Porzingis is way more, quote-unquote, skilled. Like, as somebody who has, like, handles, shooting, all that type of shit. He checks off all the boxes way more than Draymond. And I've seen Draymond dominate him.
Okay.
Like, dominate him.
That is true. Kristaps,
yeah,
plays like a pussy. To quote
Jeff Hornacek, right.
He plays like I'm keeping it funky.
Hornacek was right.
He plays like a pussy, right? We know that he doesn't have a strong enough base to be bullying.
That's
dudes.
My first
of course,
thought.
Dre's
yeah.
gonna push him out.
That's
that being said,
thought.
He can stretch out a defense. You gotta play him a foot past the 3-point line.
Yeah.
That's gonna create some lanes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you know, do we have any players that can drive those lanes? Absolutely not. Whatever it is, I don't know.
I'm still sticking to my guns. If they make that work, they can give OKC some problems. I mean, Golden State some problems in the playoffs.
Man, I roof. Oh, also, real quick note: I was thinking earlier when we were talking about like superstars controlling everything.
Yeah.
Kawhi Leonard is such a hero.
Why?
I mean, this guy don't say shit. He don't ask for shit. He's driving his 92 Tahoe or whatever, signing 5-year extensions like it's nothing. I cannot imagine him. Maybe I'll eat these words in a few years, but I can't imagine him doing the whole, like, I'll take meetings when I'm a free agent and you make presentations for me. Mm. He's just going to sign with San Antonio. He's going to die in San Antonio. He's going to live there forever, marry some Latina girl. He can have a great life. And it's just, he's just great.
The Spurs are the one organization in the NBA that
that's the unicorn. Sorry.
Culture. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of NBA teams don't have culture. The culture is revolved around their star player.
Right.
Like, Kawhi's going to go one day. When Kawhi goes in like the next 10, 15 years, there's going to be another Kawhi under him. Just
sure.
like with Tim Duncan, just like David Robinson. You sit there, you spend your whole career in San Antonio, you say all the right things, you do all the right things, then when you're done, they have a system ready to keep that machine
and
going.
And Popovich does pick for personality. That organization, they have a thing where we need people, players who are able to laugh at themselves. We need players who are able to do this. Like, they have a whole thing, Kawhi fits the bill, but that's the real unicorn. Kawhi Leonard in this day and age, don't give a fuck about social media. Don't give a fuck about being famous.
Yeah. You don't give a fuck if his hair is nice.
He's a superstar.
Dog, I heard. Cornrows.
He'll get cornrows 3 weeks ago. He'll go on national televised games. His cornrows are kind of coming out like some chick who just left Planned Parenthood. That's what
he'll
he looks like. He's slapping on the side of his head like he just got two abortions.
Yeah.
And he wears team apparel out. I saw a picture of him in the mall walking around with Spurs shorts
bro,
on.
Yo,
like his game
he's
shorts.
He's the best. Want to know some real fucked up shit? That is the best way to be incognito. I'm not going to lie. I saw Darrell Revis once wearing a Darrell Revis shirt. I walked up to that dude. I was about to be like, yo, Darrell Revis. And I was like, I can't risk being wrong.
Yeah.
You know how racist I would look to walk up to a random black dude and just be like, yo, are you Darrell Revis?
Yo.
Why? Just because I'm black and I'm wearing a Revis shirt?
Darrell Revis shirt. I'm not Darrell Revis.
So it's one of those things where you got to be like, look, I know that's Kawhi. I'm not dealing with this racism right now. If I fuck with it, let me keep it moving.
Oh, man. But.
My friend actually knew his college coach, said he still lives with his mom. She cooks all his meals. He doesn't go out. He doesn't really drink. He didn't give a fuck about anything except basketball.
See, I love it. I mean, that's fucking what I would do.
The unicorn.
I got to play basketball for a living. All right, let's talk about this whole White House snub situation. Obviously, it basically came out that Steph Curry did not want to go visit the White House. And I guess I am understanding that Steph Curry is kind of making the moral decisions for the Golden State Warriors. This really positioned him as the leader of that team to me, which is kind of interesting.
Well, I mean, morally, if you're going to have any leader, it's going to be Steph Curry, right?
Yeah,
the guy who points this guy every time he hits a three, and all he does is hit threes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Stephen Curry is the
guy going to separate his shoulder. He's pointing this guy so much.
Kevin Durant's the best player on that team, but Stephen Curry is absolutely the face of that franchise.
Face of the franchise, and yeah. I guess he's the one that the franchise gets behind in these types of decisions. So he privately decides he doesn't want to go. Mm-hmm. Trump gets wind of this and then publicly states that he is retracting the invitation from the Warriors because Steph Curry specifically didn't want to go and it's an honor, yada, yada, yada. And then he invites a hockey team. Like, we give a fuck.
We give a flying fuck.
First of all, 90% of the hockey players are Porzingis' cousins. There's nobody give a fuck about the White House on this hockey team.
The fucking stand.
You know how much hockey sucks? I don't even know any white people who watch hockey.
Bro, listen, God bless Canadians. They don't have religion. They need something, so they have hockey. I swear to God, if people were more religious in Canada, they wouldn't. But people just need something to give them purpose in life, so they're like, all right, fucking, let's do it. I'm going to have hockey.
Fuck it. It works.
Fine. Have your hockey. Who cares? Point being, all of a sudden, LeBron lets out a tweet the next day. You bum. He calls the president. You bum. Steph didn't want to go in the first place, blah, 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 defending him. I think LeBron does agree with these sentiments.
Watch your words.
But I also think LeBron was not allowed about to let Steph Curry be the wokest motherfucker in the NBA. I really think LeBron was sitting there like, hold the fuck on. You're not going to be the one that turns down a trip to the White House and gets all the credit and be this handsome ass little light-skinned motherfucker over there at Golden State shooting three-pointers and shit. Fuck this. I'm LeBron. This is my fucking league. I'm the king. I'm calling the president and a bum live on Twitter, and I'm going to shift the narrative back over to me.
So you thought this is all gamesmanship for the eventual rematch?
Bro, not even the eventual rematch. I think LeBron is very, and his crew are quite jealous of Steph Curry. I think LeBron's like, I've been doing this at a high level in this league for 15 years. Mm-hmm. This motherfucker has been doing it for three. And you ready to hand him the keys?
Well, he's got two chips and two MVPs.
Fair. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he hasn't been on an amazing tear in the last 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. That being said, I think there's a little bit of LeBron that's like, yo, he didn't earn this shit. I've been grinding for all this time, and you're ready to give it away that quickly? Mm-mm. Not how it's going down. I'm changing the narrative over to me. I think LeBron is a very calculated guy.
Extremely.
I don't think he ever does anything without extreme calculation. I think in this way, he gets to kind of support Steph with something he does believe. I truly believe that he cares about the sentiment, but he also gets to shift the attention back over to him because it's his daddy's league.
I kind of believe, well, first off, anybody who's played any type of athletic sport, an athlete calling you a bum, and I tweeted this, an athlete calling you a bum is the equivalent of anybody calling a woman a cunt. That is like that is the harshest thing you can say to somebody.
Yo.
So like when he said you bum, I felt that in my soul. Like if you're a professional athlete and somebody and an athlete calls you a bum, like there's nothing worse that they could call you in the entire English language. So I feel him on that.
Yep.
I do think he legitimately felt those things.
Agreed.
Do I think that there's a small part of him that wanted to take away that attention from Steph over something like this?
It makes sense.
You're feeling it a little bit.
You know, I'm gonna tell you why. I'm gonna tell you why.
Remember
I don't
that
think
pretty light skinned motherfucker that went to high school with you, bro? Remember all the bitches he was getting? You know, his soft ass game, just shooting up threes while you were out there in the paint.
I don't think
bruising motherfuckers, Kaz. Think about all the things you had to go through. Parents threatened to send you back to Nigeria. You know what I mean? Think about everything you had to go through. You look at this little motherfucker. Look at his perfect family. There you go, Kaz. For Nyjah.
I'm gonna give it a buck. I do believe there's a small part of that. The only reason that makes me believe there's a small part of that that could be true.
Mm-hmm.
is Kobe Bryant's response.
Talk to me.
Because Kobe didn't say anything until LeBron said something.
Ooh.
And then it was just a whole domino effect of like, oh, well, if he's going to say something, I'm going to say it. Then it was Richard Sherman. Then it was all these quarterbacks. Then it was all these teams. Mm. Da, 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 da. And now it's like, okay, what are we really going at against the president for right now? Right? Because it went from, the first thing was, okay, I wish all these players that kneel during games and the anthem get fired. Mm-hmm. That, right? The NFL players take a stand against that. Then it just so happens that, you know, media rounds are starting to happen for the NBA teams. So they asked them, like, hey, I know you talked about, you know, what you guys are going to do. You won the NBA championship. You're going to get invited to the White House. Steve Kerr has made it obvious how his feelings about certain things. What do you think? Steph was like, if they invite me, I don't think I'm going to go. Right? After that, it shifts to, you know, Trump responding to that,
right,
and, you know, saying now you're not invited and blah, blah, blah. So it's like, what took, I conspiracy theory everything.
Go.
So I'm like, why did it take until the beginning of the NBA season for all these people to finally get this swell of confidence to finally speak out about this guy who has done nothing but awful, said awful things about sure. all these players, about all these people's races and families and everything
mm-hmm.
since even before he got elected.
Sure.
You know? I think the NBA wanted to, they wanted to show up to NFL. They really? Wanted to show them up. Really? I think they wanted to be like, yo, we're watching all these NFL players being afraid to take stands and like blackballing this guy Kaepernick out yep. the league and all this other stuff.
Yep.
And Adam Silver sent out that memo in the beginning of the season, before the media days, like, that's yo, right.
we support
I want
our players
to be able to say whatever they want, do whatever they want. This yep. is a free country. This is that. And the NBA collectively was like, yo, we're not going to let the NFL show us up. Fuck this. This is our year to take over as the number one sport in America.
Yeah.
And LeBron led that charge. Like, we're going to have our guy. Obviously, I don't think there was, like, some big Justice League sit-down meeting where, like, this is what we're going to do type of thing.
Yeah.
But I do think once LeBron took that narrative from Steph and kept it going, and then Kobe said what he had to say, I think the domino effect just started to happen. And it was like, yeah, the NBA is really coming for next this year and in every way, shape, or form. In money, in TV ratings, in right. cable deals, all this type of stuff.
Not beating and your wife.
Yeah.
Not getting CTE.
exactly.
Yeah, a lot yeah. of things that they're really like, successful
at. The NBA wants to become America's game now.
It is.
It's already, a world game next to soccer.
Right.
Like, I think this was their stamp to be like, yo, we're not going to be the NFL. Like, I think that was the big message behind that.
Right.
It's like, yo, do not be afraid to speak.
You don't think it's possible that, and I'm not necessarily arguing with you, but you don't think it's possible that, there could be something to both what you said. Andrew's theory made a lot of sense, yours did too, but like,
yeah.
LeBron was just like, oh, this guy, now he's going at Steph Curry, it's getting close to home, so I'm going to say something. And then everybody else is like, all right, if LeBron can say something, I can say something.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest dude, he's already taken the arrows for us. So like, yeah. Now it's easy for me to come up and just tweet my little thing that's not going to get nearly as much attention. And then I'm emboldened by his braveness and like, let's go.
I agree.
Yeah, I think there's something there. I think there's something to that. And he must know that, okay, in 2 days, I'm having the NBA media day. I'm going to be asked nonstop about how I feel about Steph's decision not to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't I shift that to how do I feel about me calling the president a bum? So instead of talking about Steph for your entire news conference and then talking about Kyrie, two people who are not you, let's talk about your specific actions. And he was very good at kind of rebranding both of these circumstances, right? He rebranded him being the one that was kind of brave and going at the president. And then with Kyrie, he basically fulfilled all the insecurities that Kyrie had. Mm-hmm. He kept calling him a kid. He said, if my kid, son.
Compared him to his son.
If my son went to a different.
This is that media day?
Yeah.
It just dropped today. That's probably why you didn't hear. But you'll see it tonight on SportsCenter. He basically said, they're like, did you give him any advice? Kyrie any advice now that he's going to Boston? He goes, nah, man. You know, you're either with us or against him. I'm not giving the kid any advice. Listen, if my own son went to another team, I'd be like, look, I'll see you at Thanksgiving. But he said, son,
coded language
constantly. Yeah.
So LeBron is a master mind fucker, especially with his opponents and stuff like that. So To back to what you said about, you know, it getting close to home. What was the one thing that everybody kept talking about when it was, when Kaepernick was taking the knees and the NFL was saying, it was like, it's not going to mean anything until like the Bradys and the Rodgers of the world do something about this in the NFL.
Okay.
That's what everybody kept saying. It's like, yo, okay, we got, you know, Michael Bennett taking the knee. We got white players doing, you know, putting hands on shoulders and stuff like that. Travis Kelce taking a knee. But I'm like,
he got a fine ass black girlfriend. Ain't gonna give no pussy. Shout out to her, man. You ain't getting no pussy. You want me to get on my knees? You gonna have to get on your knees.
Travis Kelce looks like exactly the type of white dude who has a black girlfriend. I have no substance behind that.
Oh no, he does have. He does have a black girlfriend.
You just tell by looking at it. Nothing surprises me.
You can see by his fade that he can hit a nay-nay.
The fade and the beard. I'm like, he got a black girlfriend.
His fade and his end zone celebration. He's got a little too much.
Going on here.
I saw his girl. I was like, this explains everything.
Perfect explanation.
But that was the one thing everybody kept saying. It's like, yo, it's not going to be anything until the face of this league.
Black ladies that are dating white NFL players, if your boyfriend or husband isn't taking a knee, your pussy's trash. Okay? Okay?
It means you're replaceable. If I'm not taking a knee, it means you're very replaceable.
Keep that funky right there, honestly. If you got some good pussy, he's going to be on both knees. Okay? He's going to be laying face down into the grass if you got some good pussy. That's really how it's going down. All right?
Travis Kelce was the first one down there. He's like, yo, y'all got it, bro.
Shit, exactly.
I ain't fucking this up.
That's why Brady hasn't fucking done anything. You know how racist Brazilians are. She said, I am a white European Brazilian. I am a white European one.
I bet you are. But yeah, no, that's to your point, Akash, I was just saying, like, it meant more. The only reason why it meant more and why we wanted Brady and Rodgers to speak out first is because this is the faces of your league.
Right.
And then it's gonna open up the floodgates for the rest of your players to feel safe to talk about this, because it's like, okay, these guys have everything to lose. And if they speak out on this, that means it's safe for everybody else to do it. And I think that's what LeBron did. LeBron got right, Steph, LeBron, Kobe, you know, all these guys got out in front of it, and now it is open season.
Do you think that they should have went to the White House?
Ooh, the Warriors?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
Why?
I think it's just kind of like, I think the whole visit the White House thing is like a really convoluted photo op anyway.
Right.
It's not something that needs to be, you know, mandatory to me. I mean, like, you guys are still champions. You guys are still whatever. But if the person who holds the office doesn't really respect the ideals of the people on that team, you know, what's the, like, years ago, Craig Hodges, when the Chicago Bulls won the NBA title, he handed a letter to George Bush or Reagan or whoever's president at the time with a bunch of bullet points on how you could help the black community.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And mind you, he was nearly as, not worse than Trump. No, we're nearly as close to the scrutiny that Trump is getting now.
Right.
And it's like, all right, well, why do this awkward photo op that's only going to help Trump?
So
I don't think the Warriors get anything out of it.
There's two arguments, yeah, right? The one argument would be for going would be, hey, use this potential photo op as leverage to get a meeting. And then in this meeting, tell Trump everything that you'd like changed and the things that you think can be implemented to make change, et cetera. Now, the other option is don't go. And hope that the shame of not going resonates with Trump, and then he's more interested in your plight and interested in your concern. And I think that's how you got to weigh it. Because ultimately, what we don't want to do is chase retweets and chase, you know, wokeness and hey, you're a good guy, but what's the difference that we're making?
Yeah, but right? How many meetings with groups and celebrities and people have Trump taken with these folks and nothing
changed?
Let me ask you
another question. Mm. How often has Trump been shamed successfully?
Never.
I mean, that seems impossible to me. And in general, my feeling is just like, I'm tired of everybody speaking to people who agree with them and then not talking to people. So my personal feeling would be, I don't like this dude, but I'll go. I'll go and we'll talk. And my platform might even be not even talking to Trump. It might be, look, I don't agree with anything this dude says, but I'm gonna take a picture with him. We're humans. We can talk. We can disagree.
I don't think so, man. Like, yo, you've seen those White House visits a bunch of times.
Yeah.
How many times do these players or coaches even get to speak during these things?
But saying you can use your platform publicly on Twitter or whatever to say.
Not even publicly, privately. You leverage it. Be like, listen, we will go. Clearly, you know that we have some differences in opinion on how this country should be run, and we would like to set up a meeting alongside with this photo op to express those concerns to you. Because that's how a democracy works, right? That's how we do it. We have these discussions, and what we do is when we get locked in our... I understand why somebody wouldn't, but we have to... So
we're not dealing with the actual politician here. We're not dealing with somebody who is withholding to the democratic policies that right. has run this country.
What's the goal, though? What's the goal?
The goal on
change,
skipping?
Right?
On skipping...
No. Just in general for both. Change, right?
Yeah.
So absolutely. You want to see positive change. And so the next question you got to ask yourself is, how do we see positive change? Do we see positive change by not going? Does that change legislation? Does that do anything? Maybe through the shame, maybe, right? I don't think that it works that way personally. I think that it just emboldens his base. Like people right now, there's a lot of conversations about, you know, all these people who are kneeling for the anthem. I think the left... You know, I think, you know, as I lean politically left, I think we see that as a protest for equality and equal rights. I think the right and Trump's right just sees that as kneeling for the flag. I don't think they see at all this protest. He's positioned it. He's created the narrative where he's pro-flag, he's pro-anthem, and everybody who's kneeling isn't, right? So I think a huge PR move needs to be done on the left side in convincing these people, hey, we're not anti-flag, we're not anti-veteran, we're not anti these things. Because
but they've
ultimately,
said this, though. They said need this to continue. Over and over it and need, over
listen,
again.
Listen, just as the left lives in their echo chamber, so does the right, right? I mean, Villanueva, the guy on the Steelers, who the entire Steelers team, for everybody who's listening right now, Pittsburgh Steelers team, decide to spend the national anthem in the locker room. Villanueva is a player on the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's an offensive lineman. He decided to go out and stand in the tunnel while they played it. The next day, he had the highest selling jersey in National Football League.
A lineman.
An offensive lineman had the highest selling jersey in National Football League. So for everybody who assumes...
He probably didn't even sell. He probably had to custom make it at NFL.com.
but think about this. Villanueva, that means there are white, Trump... arguably racist folks walking around with a Mexican's name on the back of their talking about build the wall, but keep this big motherfucker in here. Do you see what I'm saying? Right, so there's a lot more things going on in this situation, right? There's a lot more than we know. So is this going to be effective, and isn't this an effective change agent, right? Is one question. And I think the second question, which is very interesting, is, where were all these people before?
What do you mean? Oh, the NFL players.
NFL, because oh, absolutely. Are you, biggest question is, are you anti-Trump or are you pro-black lives and pro-black equality and equal treatment? Because you had a couple weeks before Trump tweeted anything to sit down. You didn't. Trump tweets one hot shit and you're like, oh, I'm going to show everybody how woke I am. I'm definitely sitting down. What about last week, Doug?
I'm going to agree with you 100% on that. I thought Sunday's protest demonstrations, all that type of stuff was super bogus. Super bogus.
Really?
It's like, all right, they aren't, like you said, are you pro-black lives? Are you anti-Trump? No. All these motherfuckers are pro-shield. They are pro the NFL shield. That is it. That's all they kneeled for. That's all they linked arms for. That's all it was for. It was like, you're not going to disrespect the NFL shield, Mr. Trump, and we're going to show you by our solidarity behind that. All of that got lost in the message of why people were kneeling in the first place.
Break that everybody, down.
Okay, so like you said, what's this, week four in the NFL season? It's about to be week four? Preseason, whatever.
3 weeks done, yeah. We had a preseason.
This is the third game, but there's preseason's game. Yeah. You had plenty of time to kneel, dog, and those knees ain't dirty.
You know, you had since August to make a statement if you're kneeling for the right reason. Ray Lewis was on Fox Sports saying, yo, I will never kneel during the national anthem. It means too much to me.
He finessed
it. It doesn't
shit.
Matter what happens.
Did you see what he did, though?
And now he's sitting there kneeling on both hands.
But you
like,
know what that is.
Like he's praying.
He's praying. That motherfucker finessed
bullshit.
That whole shit. He's just showing off that fake-ass painted hair.
Full bullshit. And that was my whole thing. The only reason why people did anything of any sort yesterday is because the NFL teams told them it was okay for the first time. It was the first time. They all put out little statements. They all put out little press releases about what Trump said. They said nothing about black equality. They said nothing about police brutality. They said nothing about all that. It was all about protecting the damn shield.
And you want to know some bullshit? you had all these owners and you had all these coaches that came out and made statements that were anti-Trump, right? Where were all these owners and coaches when Cap needed a job? Now Trump,
where are they right now?
Now Trump is in the perfect position, right, to call them out on their bullshit. You're falling for these traps.
They are bullshit.
On some real shit. Yeah. I think that Trump's laid the trap for these motherfuckers. Oh, Robert Kraft, you going to say something against me? You just gave me a Super Bowl ring a couple weeks ago, pimping. So which side you really on?
Woody Johnson, you're on my cabinet.
Come on, you know
you
what I mean?
You donated $1 million to my inauguration and you're sitting there linking arms.
So
the national anthem, like,
it's a lot of funky shit going on. And again, I'm not necessarily shitting on the player who is trying to provide for his family, who's trying to provide for his cousins, who has extended family members, who's probably paying for them to go to college so they can change. They can really bring up their entire family out of poverty. That's a reality for a lot of these players. Let's keep it real, right? Especially if you're a player who's making decent money, you're probably lifting 20 people out of poverty.
Yeah. Agreed.
Okay. There's nothing wrong with having an emotional tie to your close family and wanting to keep that and not wanting to risk that. I get that and I understand who you're playing for. But there's also something in humans that allows us to be part of a cause that is bigger than ourselves. It allows us to believe in religion. It allows us to go to war. It allows us to fight for all these things. And I can see how you might get caught up in this situation and want to be part of it. I would just hope it's for the right reasons.
Yeah. The one thing that really bothered me about yesterday was the people kneeling, the people sitting during the anthem, the people doing all that type of stuff. The reasons why Kaepernick and Michael Bennett and all these other players knelt during the anthem was completely lost on everybody. It looked like a fad. It looked like a fad yesterday. Mm-hmm. That's the shit that kind of bothered me about it. I'm like, it looked like it was the cool thing to do now. And you're not kneeling.
It looked like tweeting about being charitable and not giving a dollar.
Exactly. It looked like taping. Look, I'm going to give $5 to this homeless person.
To the homeless guy, but you videotaping it, post it out there. Yeah.
It's like right now, it's super safe to do that. And I get it. Kaepernick was one of the first people to do it. He kicked the doors down. He had to fall on that sword for it to even be a thing.
Right.
But the message to some people got lost completely on the way. And it's whack, dog. Like, seeing Ray Lewis kneeling down on both knees looking like a sucker. Like, shit, LeSean McCoy only a few weeks ago was saying how, you know, this doesn't even really deserve attention. Kaepernick's not playing because
he's a bum.
This motherfucker was stretching.
Yeah.
He was not even kneeling. Like, that is blatantly disrespectful.
Yeah.
Like, on all accounts, like, there's no way you could spin that. Like, if you're taking a knee because, you know, originally Kaepernick was sitting on the bench and he talked to a war veteran. He's like, listen, this has nothing to do with the army. Also, what can I do to make, you know.
And that war veteran did not say calisthenics.
No. This motherfucker is sitting there stretching his glutes out during the national anthem. Yeah. Like, that is like, wow.
That's disrespectful to the flag.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, now look, I'm going to be way more, you know, over the top now. And it's like, it's corny to me. It's corny, and I get it. Not everybody probably thought like that. I think there's a good chance there's a lot of players that wanted to kneel for the anthem initially.
Yep.
But now had like the perfect opportunity to for the right reasons.
Yeah.
But yesterday just rubbed me the wrong way, man.
Also think that you can support Black equality without kneeling for the anthem.
Yeah.
And I think that's another thing that gets lost here, right? We got to make sure that we don't hop into this, you know.
It's black and white.
Yeah. Often there's no nuance, right? It gets black and white. Like there's this idea like silence is violence, meaning like if you're not out there fighting the fight, then that means you're actually helping the oppressors.
Yeah.
And that's not the case. I mean, for Villanueva, and I was upset about Tomlin for this. This guy did 3 tours of duty in Afghanistan. The thing that makes you go through that is your love for country.
Patriotism. Mm-hmm.
There is nothing else that motivates you to go through 3 tours of duty anywhere else.
Also, is he first generation?
I'm not sure, but Tomlin said, he was like, you know, we said we were going to all do it as a team, and I wanted to do it all as a team. And it's like, my man, he did 3 tours of duty. I think you got to respect that. Hmm. And me personally, I would stand for the anthem. I still will stand for the anthem, and I've explained why. That being said, I completely support somebody not doing it. I like the idea of locking arms, to be honest. I like the idea when a guy is standing, and then his teammate's next to him, and he has his hand on his shoulder. Like, that solidarity is actually beautiful. To be honest with you, this is the most that I've cared about the anthem. In a weird way.
Colin Kaepernick made the anthem hot.
Trump and Kaepernick. Trump and Kaepernick brought value back into this anthem. We took it for granted. It was like some shit in school where we pledge allegiance to the flag, United States of America. Like, it was just, you went through the motions, right? We would listen to the anthem, like, all right, let's get the game going. You make the plans go boom. Now, when we see that, we see the importance of feeling a part of something, mm-hmm. and we recognize that there are people who don't feel part of it.
Yeah.
And that resonates with you regardless if you agree with them or not.
Yeah.
It resonates with you that there is something bigger than yourself and some people don't feel included in that.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you agree with them or not, you have to acknowledge it. And I think we will see something positive from this. I think right now people are reactive. They're mm-hmm. a little bit angry, right? It's like someone says, you know, it's like someone cuts you off in a car. You say fuck you, they say fuck you. Maybe 10 miles later, you guys are at the drive-thru together, and it's just like, ah, man, I didn't mean to say fuck. You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. You just cut me off, and it's like, oh, I didn't see you. All right, man.
Well, that's
right.
My hope. That's my hope. My hope is, like, all this dialogue, all this action that people are taking, like, my hope is, like, at the end of the day, after cooler heads prevail, everyone's like, all right, listen. You know, let's...
Hopefully. Yeah. But my big fear is nobody's listening to people who disagree with them. And that's, again, the reason I would go to the White House. Mm. Not even because I think Trump will listen, but because I can say, look, we got to listen to people who disagree with us. We got to talk to people who disagree with us. Even if Trump's not going to listen to a word I say, we're going to talk. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just a photo op, go talk to somebody you disagree with. Go get somewhere.
I could agree with that, but...
Both sides didn't do it.
No, right? No. Like, on either side.
Like both sides didn't do it. Like, I'd love for the Warriors to go to the White House and have that conversation and then take everything that Trump told them and try to hold him accountable to that, regardless if he'd done nothing. And I understand their reluctance because they could also be saying, he's just going to use this as a photo op
mm-hmm.
and he's going to say, hey, these guys are on my side, this, that, the other. That's fine. But I would also like, because NASCAR came out and said, if any people don't stand up for the anthem, then they should be fired.
Yeah, well, who gives a fuck about NASCAR?
Motherfuckers that give a fuck about the anthem. But right, Dale Earnhardt Jr. came out and he said, he's like, this country is built off of protests. This is built off of, you know, freedom of speech and freedom of expression. You should never inhibit that, this, that, the other.
Mm.
Point is, I would love them to hop out of their echo chamber as well and say, hey, why don't you just listen to these people? Why don't we have a conversation about what exactly, are they kneeling because they hate America? No, at least that's not my understanding of it.
Yeah, no, but that's my thing too. Like with, sure, yeah, on the surface and a big existential thinking of what America's ideal should be, yes, we should all sit down. We should all listen to each other. Yes, I understand why for somebody who grew up in Kansas and middle America and how much pride they have in the country and hard work and going to war and fighting and all that other stuff.
Yep.
I completely understand why the anthem would mean that to you.
Mm-hmm.
What a lot of people don't understand is it's never really been about the anthem. It's been about what the anthem is and the flag and all these other symbols are supposed to represent.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about, you know, if you fight that hard and you think that hard about how you feel about your country and people sitting towards the anthem and not saluting the flag and all that other stuff, then I'm assuming you know exactly what that flag is supposed to represent. Then I'm assuming you're supposed to know exactly what that song represents. And to a lot of people, it's, you know, truth, justice, the American way, freedom, all this type of stuff. A lot of people do not have that shit. Mm-hmm. They don't. And it's like, yo, if you can sit here and listen to me, it's like, listen, I understand. This is why it makes me angry. This is why I've chosen this way of protest. Because all the stuff that you get to enjoy, I don't get to enjoy.
So this is why we need to have a conversation.
Uh-huh.
And this is the thing that a lot of people maybe don't even realize is that... sometimes racism can blind you to circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think the majority of, you know, racist people in this country are going, black people should get killed by the cops.
Mm.
I think what the majority of racist people in this country are thinking, black people aren't getting killed by the cops. They're acting crazy, and that's why the cops are protecting themselves and killing them. And I think it's their racism that sees black people in a light in which they might be violent and provoke an officer to do that.
Mm.
I don't even think they're aware of that said racism. And I think when you have these conversations with people, and it's very hard to accept, right? Yeah. You're sitting in a situation as a black man where you've dealt with this,
yes.
right?
Yes.
I'm sitting in this situation as a white man where I've seen my black friends, the way the cops have treated them and not treated me. Mm. And I've also had conversation with white people who maybe not, might not identify themselves as racist, but I would identify them that way.
Yeah.
So I've spoken to, exactly. So I've spoken to these you know these both sides, right? And I think that is the importance of conversation, which is you get to sit down with someone and go, listen, I know you don't think what I know you actually think that you're right about this. I know this is not coming from a David Duke. Yes, they're the David Duke racist motherfuckers of the world, but there are also people who need to be told, hey, you don't hang out with black people ever. You haven't had a conversation with them. The only time you see them is on the news when they're getting arrested.
On TV. Yeah.
Maybe you should have some conversation with them. They'll tell you what's going on. Mm-hmm. And they'll tell you about a time where you just randomly searched, ripped out of your car, somebody went through the fucking trunk, tore up all the luggage, and just left the shit.
And here's another thing is middle America, there's probably a lot of towns out there with like a black person or no black people. But they probably know a lot of people who served in the war.
Mm-hmm. Facts.
So if you try to tell them about racism and then they try to tell you about like, all right, well, listen, I get that that's fucked up, but I had a cousin who went to the war and died for this country. So to me, that matters more than the racism you're encountering. And I'm not saying anybody's right, but there are like, I think Andrew Sanders, definitely the David Duke racist for sure. But there's a lot of people also who I just think, and Trump winning is what made me realize like, oh, I don't understand this country like I thought I did.
Mm-hmm.
We live in our own little bubbles, but there's a lot of people who just don't. They're not racist, but they're just like, yo, I got my own shit to worry about.
Yeah.
I'm a poor white dude. Nobody's talking about me. I am whatever. I'm just saying the conversation could help something. That's all.
We need it. We should force people to have these conversations.
Yeah.
It's tough.
And I feel like this is a conversation that is never going to end. You know what I mean? Like, I don't.
Sure.
It's the sad thing about it is it's like as a black man, like you don't ever like what's the goal? Like what's the light at the end of the tunnel? Like
equal,
I don't see a light at the end of the tunnel.
It's just justice.
We just get a little bit closer each time.
Well, it's justice, I mean? Right? Like I think I thought about this a lot too, right? It's just like you can't stop people from being racist. Right? Whether people are going to be racist, people won't be racist, but you can't control every single person.
You can't control anything.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, like
I see what you mean by that, but that could be taken like way.
But what I'm trying to say is like there are hot flashes of racism. Uh-huh. You're walking down the street and a Chinese guy bumps into your arm. You're like, fucking Chinese guy. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, what the fuck was I saying? That was crazy. You're not like, fucking human. Heart and soul. You know what I'm saying? It's like there's hot flashes of shit, right? I got totally distracted by this Chinese guy that's bumping into everybody.
The imaginary Chinese guy that knocked you over.
Okay, so I think, but what the goal is I think justice, right? If you were getting equal justice, like when a black guy gets killed by a police officer that we deem was done illegally, he should be punished. And once officers start getting punished for that, all of a sudden you're going to see that behavior changing.
Yeah.
If officers aren't getting punished for it and they know they're not getting punished for it, why would behavior change? It's very similar to kids, right? If a kid throws his food on the ground and you don't spank the kid or you don't punish the kid in some way, then he thinks he could throw the fucking food on the ground.
Yeah, but it's like, and why I say it doesn't seem like there's ever light at the end of the tunnel is that it doesn't even seem like it's slowing down. Like, it happens more and more frequently. Like, it's like...
Oh, no, it doesn't. But it doesn't. That's not true.
But it feels like
Barack it's Obama media. Said a thing. Yeah, Barack Obama like said a thing. I think he did a Mark Maron podcast, and he said something like, you can't say we haven't made progress.
Mm.
And I think he might have even said, unless you were around to see. But, like, if you think of where we've come from,
mm-hmm.
I'm not saying anything is great now, but where we've come from was... I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
No, like, sicking dogs on people on TV. Like, you know.
No, I can hear that. I definitely get that point of view. I definitely
change
get
is slow.
Point of view.
And it's like how people feel about New York. What? The only stories they hear about New York, people are getting sliced. Somebody's getting eaten by pit bulls in the Bronx. You know,
pocketbook snatched.
Exactly. So they come to New York, they're so afraid and they're scared. Yeah. You take the subway? I've heard so many people say it to me. You ride the subway? Right? But we're in New York every day, so we live it and we know this not that crazy.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's the same thing goes for definitely, I mean, I can't speak for myself, but I imagine as a black dude, it's like if every time you turn on the TV and you see some story about a cop getting killed by, a black dude getting killed by police, you start thinking, shit, every time I go out, cops are going to kill some. But how many of your friends been killed by police?
Not one.
That's the thing, you know what I mean? Like,
at the same time, like, it's happened in my backyard. I'm from Staten Island.
Yeah.
I know the block Eric Garner got choked out on.
So you know what it is? It's like HIV, son. It's like, none of us got a friend that got AIDS.
But every time we fuck girl raw, we're like, I hope that bitch don't got AIDS. Oh my God. Please don't let this be the one. Please don't let this be the one. You know what I mean? It's like we hear the stories and it resonates with us because it could affect our fucking lives. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, and you're going to obviously have a different experience with that than any of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just what it is.
It's real shit, man. And like, you know, I get, you know, yesterday's protest or Sunday's sitting or arms linking, like that was, you know, it's like you said, progress is slow. And like if this guy making fun of calling you guys sons of bitches was what made, you know, people really do their research to see why the kneeling started, and if that gets one extra person to figure out, no, it's not real. This isn't really why they're kneeling because of police brutality, da, da, da. Then I guess, yeah. Sunday was, you know, a success. But, you know, it's still kind of finicky to me, but we'll see.
We're talking about it. We're having a conversation.
We're talking about it.
100,000 exactly. People going to listen to this. They're going to have a conversation with three of their friends. That's 300,000. Maybe three of their friends will have another conversation. Now we touched 1 million people in 2 weeks.
And there you go. And that's all you can hope for. So, I guess.
What if Trump, deep down, is just upset that he bankrupted the USFL.
USFL, that was my theory. You know, and Trump never loses,
and
dog.
And then he's like, fuck the NFL for taking me out, okay? And he spoke to his man at WWE. What's his name?
Vince McMahon.
Isn't Vince McMahon's wife on his team?
Yeah, Linda
he's
McMahon,
like, listen,
yeah.
What, NFL took out the XFL? All right, let's come together and let's take these motherfuckers out. Let's post fake CTE reports. Trump probably invented CTE. I never even heard of CTE.
He
probably
was Jeezy's group. I was like, corporate thugs? All right. What? Yeah. No.
So what if that's what this is all about? What if this is payback for the NFL fucking him over back in the day? That could be it.
Trump don't lose, dog. He's I thought I had that exact dude. Thought.
That could be the most petty shit ever.
Oh, yeah.
That being said, I will say this. If you are a national anthem singer now, bring your A game, B, because you are getting all the retweets. Well, I've seen more random people sing the national anthem in the last 2 days than I've ever seen in my entire life.
And Vince Staples said it best, yo. At the end of the day, the national anthem don't even slap like that.
Nah, B. Vince is wrong, yo.
No, you know what? You know whose national anthem slaps? Fucking God Save the Queen. That shit is hard.
I'm about to walk out the fucking room right
God
now.
God Save the Queen don't hit?
Bro, do you see this colonized ass motherfucker?
No, there's no, bro.
Think in your head, bro. English are in your head, bro. You think Indians going to agree with you on England's
I haven't even heard it, dog.
Anthem?
I've never
heard God Save the Queen.
Never, bro.
Fuck that shit, son.
Never. The
Star Spangled Banner doesn't even have any rhythm.
Are you? Can you?
That actually, when you said it right there,
I got into it.
Oh, that shit goes so hard. I'll be honest, and I'm always joking around about this. Other countries' national anthems suck.
Nah.
I think we do them a favor by winning all the gold medals so they don't have to listen to some bullshit. Nah, dead man. Ass.
God Save the Queen.
Name lyrics to God Save the Queen.
It goes, nah, 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 nah. I don't know the actual words, but I know the melody.
That's it.
But that's it. A fire song. I don't need to know the words.
Bullshit.
I know the melody. I'll bob my head to this.
US goes harder than whatever you
listen,
just did.
Listen, it's the best. I see the other athletes happy.
The
genuinely
only reason why
happy.
I know our national anthem is because we've sung the show.
Yeah, but hit that again. Hit that beginning again.
What?
I wasn't really on board until I heard you do it. Then I was like, that does sound good.
And then the ends?
That's true. Listen, if you don't like the national anthem, find Whitney Houston. Find Whitney Houston singing it in 1990, 91, whatever
listen,
it was.
If Marvin Gaye's version was the actual national anthem,
Let's keep it real. You can kneel for the national anthem. I'm totally fine with that. Mm-hmm. If you don't like the national anthem, then you got to leave the country. Okay? Get the fuck out the country.
It don't slap that hard, bro. It don't slap that hard.
Bro.
It doesn't,
It couldn't even be remixed better. I honestly don't think it's possible. Dude, the way Whitney sang it, what did your
that
boy
was beautiful.
Say? Oh, my goodness. One of the announcers, what's the guy's name? Chris Collinsworth? Is that his name?
No, he goes, Al Michaels.
Oh, it was Al Michaels. I thought it was Collinsworth, but maybe it was Al Michaels. But one of them said it was like, after Whitney sung that, we just couldn't concentrate. It was like, that's why we lost. We were supposed to.
It was Collinsworth, right? I thought you were talking about the commentator.
Well, now he's a commentator,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all I'm saying. It's a beautiful
side.
Beautiful.
Sorry. We got to update it.
Keep it 100. If it's hotter, you would stand?
What's up?
If it was hotter, would you stand?
If that shit was slapping, I'm like, yo. If
it was Dipset right
anthems,
now.
You're like, Dipset anthem
right equality. This shit cranks.
Yo, if Dipset anthem was the real national anthem, I'm like, y'all motherfuckers are going to stand for this 40, goddammit. Fuck all this shit. My country died for this song. Cameron died for this anthem, goddammit.
Yeah.
Dipset anthem should be the new national anthem. Fuck that shit. Instead of putting their hand over the heart, you just lean to the left a little bit. That'd be good, bro. That'd be good for unity. The world would be a much better place
if Dipset's national anthem.
Dipset anthem, yes.
How many references to beating women? I mean, it would work out for the NFL.
I'm about to say, like, yo, that seems pretty on brand.
It really does. All right, man. We had a little, some shit happened and a little snafu. I don't know, computer shut off, but I don't even have to be telling you this because we could just edit that shit. So, okay, so that's the key. That's what we'll do. We're going to make sure the Dipset national anthem never gets played at a sporting event ever, okay?
To secure the. So many people shooting off guns in the sky.
We don't need that, okay? There's already a prison inside the Eagles stadium, so we don't need that at every single stadium. This is not what the sporting world needs right now.
Shout out to Joel Santana, man.
Shout out to Joel's. Absolutely. Played in the comfort of your own home. But anyway, that's another episode of Flagrant 2. Thank you guys so much for subscribing, for listening, for spreading the word. Keep spreading the word. Keep telling people. We appreciate your patronage.
Can we plug some shit?
Absolutely, man. Please tell us. Talk to us.
October 7th, yo. Henny Palooza Chicago. Tickets are still on sale.
Hot.
HennyPalooza.com. I'll be there with water guns. We'll always have special guests. Last time we came in there, we had Chance the Rapper come out. We got Fake Short Drive, DJ and Austin Mills, Mech Dot, bunch of people. Please come, Chicago. If you're in town, spend some money, buy some tickets, drink a lot, get some good music, have a good time. It's a great time. Chicago is awesome every time we go there. So please come back and support.
Hot. Akash.
Philly Comedy Club this Friday. Come through. I'm also, I forget the name of the club, but I'm in Fairfield, Connecticut. So there's probably not that many places to see comedy if you're there.
Fairfield Comedy
Club. Saturday. Come through.
Listen to 441, watch 441. You can watch it on my YouTube. I put out a comedy experience, stand-up comedy experience, and it's youtube.com/TheAndrewSchultz. You can check it out, watch it again, share it again. Keep putting it out there. I would love that, man. I'd be so appreciative of that. I got some shows coming up. I'll be in Chicago, matter of fact. I'll be there the 4th through the 7th of November. And then I'm going to be in Long Island at McGuire's as well a certain time. I'll tell you guys next week. I forget what that is. And then New York City, I'm going to be here the 9th, November 9th. I will be doing Gotham Comedy Club for the New York Comedy Festival, and those tickets are available at GothamComedyClub.com. Also, Akash, you got a show.
Yeah, we're doing a show at New York Comedy Club. I talked earlier about the last week we do a show called the American Born Desi Comedians. They call us American Born Confused Desis if you're born here and you're Indian and you don't know what the fuck you're doing. Anyway, we flip that. We do a tour. It's a good show. We're going to be at the New York Comedy Festival November 12th at Caroline, 7:30. Come see us.
Okay, man. Thank you guys so much for watching Flavor 2. No easy buckets. Analysis by assholes. Peace.